Je suis Gab, il est Jules. It's a Monday. It's Sunday. How did I do? Okay?
Amazing.
All right, try my best, impressed. Man. We have, welcome aboard, because we have quite the show for you. We're going to have mega quick hits, because so much stuff happened around Europe, from Bayern's voodoo to Barcelona 6 to Juve losing to craziness between West Ham and Arsenal. But let's start at Manchester United, who were taking on Leicester in the semifinal of the FA Cup. Joining us.
Quarterfinals,
even. Hey, you know, it's the FA Cup. It's magical. Yeah. Felt like the semifinal. One of those teams went to the semifinal. Joining us is Don Hutchinson, who's going to help us sort through it. Don, I'm going to start with this because I know Jules wants to bring this up. I have long advocated playing the diamond, which we've seen Solskjaer do several times this year. I thought it's a good way to get, hey, how about I get two midfielders who can play rather than usual one in there? Mm-hmm. He plays the diamond, but he decides to rest Bruno Fernandes, possibly so he can be fit and rested when they go and play, when Portugal goes and plays.
Portugal thanks him.
In their World Cup qualifiers. No, I'm kidding. What did you make when you saw he was dropped?
I just think it's very bizarre, Gab, Jules. I think it goes back a couple of weeks when Ollie came out with this ludicrous statement that I've never, ever heard before, where he's saying titles and trophies are just for the ego. I mean, the manager of Man United, that's your job. That's the whole essence of watching football as a fan and playing the game as a player, to win trophies. I don't get why he's got this obsession with resting his big players. He's done it against Sheffield United in the Premier League, lost that game. Done it against Besiktas in the Champions League, lost that game. Done it again against Leicester, lost it badly. Why the obsession with putting some of your star players on the bench? Then in the end, you had to bring five substitutes on. Ahmad came on at the end, but four of his big hitters have to come off the bench to try and rescue the game.
And they all came out at the same time, which was kind of cool, and I hadn't seen before. But Don, to be fair to Ollie, and since Jan's not here, I'm going to stick up for Ollie on this point.
Because I'm waiting for this. Go on.
No. So when you talk about the dropping his big players, Rashford, and who of course was unavailable, was injured. And Bruno Fernandes had played an enormous number of games this season. So I don't think resting players occasionally is that big a deal. And also, I think what he meant was that the measuring stick has to be their performance in the league, has to be where they are in the league, because in cups you can get lucky, you can get unlucky.
When is your next league game?
In a long time.
Okay. When you plan of who you play, rotation, changes, everything, you look at your games, but not just the next game. You look at a block of 4 to 5 games, 5 to 6 games, right? And say, okay, this is the games coming up. This is what we can do. This is how we're going to approach those games tactically, what we're going to play, what we're going to highlight before the game to the players, right? Surely it's an FA Cup quarterfinals against Leicester, not Shrewsbury or Chesterfield. It's Leicester away. You don't go like, that's a good game to rest him. That's a good game to put him on the bench. Surely that it doesn't work like this.
I know, but look, Man City are still in the competition, and surely there's no way United could ever beat Manchester City. Oh, wait.
Oh,
no.
Hey.
All right. we're going to get into this more in our podcast chat, but I think we'd be remiss if we didn't once again praise Leicester City, because you know, I said like a couple months ago, ooh, this is James Maddison's team now. It's no longer Jamie Vardy's team. Great, but James Maddison is injured. Harvey Barnes is injured.
Kelechi Iheanacho's team now.
It looks that way. Can you just talk us through a little bit about what you saw from Leicester in this game and just the job that Brendan Rodgers is doing?
I tell you what I did see from the managers before we even get to the players is different standards. And I think we're talking about one elite manager, and that's Brendan Rodgers. I think he's tactically very good. I think he sets his teams up well. He's an attacking manager, a little bit cautious when needed, but he lets his players fly. He puts them in a system where, you know, they can go and express themselves, even though Jamie Vardy's not scoring goals. Iheanacho has now stepped up to the plate. People like Ndidi, Tielemans, Castagna. The list actually goes on and on and on. But I think it's what he does to his players. The confidence I think he gives to his players, guys, that he lets them go and play. You know, he accepts that this is a massive game against a huge club like Man United, but they weren't afraid. They weren't underdogs in that game. They would have went toe-to-toe United. And in the end, the scoreline probably flattered United. Leicester were brilliant.
Is that the sense you got, that Leicester went out there and said, because look, you could also look at the other way and say, look, United may be second on the table, but this isn't Sir Alex's United. There's no reason for Leicester to be in any way intimidated.
No, and I thought tactically Rodgers could Solskjaer big time. And I think we go back again to the point that we just made quickly, is that if you're Brendan Rodgers and his players, and you look at the team sheet an hour and a half before kickoff, and you see Bruno Fernandes is not in there, and you see what Solskjaer is trying to do, you said, bonus. This is even better for us, because we're going to have a lot of the ball. They won't be able to have someone like Bruno Fernandes to play quickly in transition when they get the ball back.
No, but they have Pogba and Van de Beek to do that.
I know, but they're different players to Bruno Fernandes, both of them. And the point is, which is true, Fred gifted a goal to Leicester. McTominay gifted a goal to Leicester, which is true. Both of them, huge mistakes that you should not have seen for a team like United at that kind of level. However, tactically, United were way, way, way beaten by Leicester.
Well, this is where I struggle a little bit with it, and we will get into this more, but Fred, I think, had been playing well, you know, in the previous months. McTominay seems to be getting praised left, right, and center continuously, like he's some sort of oversized Roy Keane. I just find it a little bit hard for people to go back to the thing, now all of a sudden all these players are rubbish. And
no,
when
but
I
they
see,
made big mistakes.
No, I know, but what I'm saying is, when I see performances like this, when I see the two legs against Milan in the Europa League, you know, a decimated Milan. I know United also had players out, but you're Manchester United. I really start to worry about why this team adds up to less than the sum of their parts, and how Solskjaer gets out of this situation. How do you build? How do you build from here? We're going to get into that in a bit. In if you listen to our podcast, if not, we'll be moving on. All right, let's get a little more granular here, as we like to do on the Gavin Jewell Show. We're going to go back to United in a minute, because I think there's a lot more stuff to unpack there. But I want to go to Leicester, because, Don, I remember you, drawing on your own experience, you were in some ways in a similar position at West Ham. In other words, a team that, you know, that the one season, obviously, you had your FA Cup run, you finished seventh. And I'm curious, as a manager, as sort of the mood in the camp, when you're in that situation, so when you're a team that's outside the traditional Big Six, and I use that term in financial terms. I mean, Arsenal are 10th in the table, as we like to keep reminding Jules, but, you know, they are the Big Six because they have an enormous wage bill relative to
14 teams as well.
And revenues and whatnot. Can you talk a little bit about what the mood is when you're having this sort of season? Because I would imagine, in the same way there is at Leicester, there's a mix of veterans, you know, who maybe this might be their last chance to win something. There might be young players who maybe are already, you know, looking around and thinking, all right, or their agents at least are, ooh, how can I parlay this into a big money move? I mean, when I look at this Leicester side, players like Tielemans, like Fofana, like Madison, I mean, these are all players who, you know, could play at a higher level. You talk a little bit about that vis-a-vis your own experience, of course, when you were at West Ham, when you had guys like Glenn Johnson, Michael Carrick were still there, Jermaine Defoe, you know, all people who eventually moved on to bigger clubs. How does a manager balance that out?
Do you know, the best balance that you have, Gab, is a mixture of youth and experience, where the youngsters drive the experienced players on to try and keep going. The experienced players give all the knowledge that they've got to the young players. I remember, take you back very quickly to my Liverpool days in the early 90s, in 1990, where we had loads of youngsters coming through, myself, Jamie Redknapp, Steve Arkness, Steve McManaman, Robbie Fowler. There was loads of young players coming through, but we never had the experience of the 27, 28-year-olds. The older guys, 32s, 33s, like Steve McMahon and Peter Beardsley, Adam Hansen, these guys were sort of just about retiring. So we had no real leaders to try and lean on. John Barnes and probably Mark Wright were the best two leaders for us. And then again, when you fast forward to West Ham, you know, Glenn Johnson, Joe Cole, Michael Carrick, Jermaine Defoe, great youngsters, but experience in the squad as well. You know, people like Teddy Sheringham, Steve Lomas, Christian Daly, great guys that you can try and rely on. And I think it's the same now when I look at this Leicester side. Terrific young players, speedy players, lots of experience, but a manager that lets them go and play, lets them fly, you know, puts them into a system where they are going to succeed. They've got loads of confidence. Why wouldn't they? And I think it's only a matter of time before And you mentioned it, the traditional big six. I think it's very close now for Leicester to try and come into that conversation of being one of the big six from what they've done and where they've been.
The key is to keep that squad together, because we saw after the title with Ranieri that unfortunately Mahrez and Kante, especially them two, left pretty quickly. And I think if they can keep this squad like it is now, and maybe you could add, you know, a little bit there and there to make it even stronger. If you can keep Rodgers for the next 2-3 years, then that's why maybe you cement your place into that top four.
Well, it's an interesting dynamic there, right, about how you grow, because I think Brendan Rodgers will have a market. I mean, I think the next big job opening
and
that opens
players
up.
Too.
With the players, I'm not sure it's going to be this summer because of COVID, so I think you have a strong case to keep them. So I think you could go back and say, guys, we can take another run next season. You know, a run at the Champions League, a run at the Premier League. Why not, right? Every team starts the season on 0 points. After that, I don't think the challenge is to lock these guys in on big contracts and try to keep them. I think what you try to do is you accept the fact that you may need to sell somebody, one or two players, and if you can cash in really big, I mean, I wouldn't want to see Tielemans go because, you know, as you know, Jules, for me, he's my player of the season.
Yeah.
But if you can sell one of those two guys and reinvest intelligently, like they did when Conte and Riyad Mahrez left, you know, you can set yourself up pretty nicely and you can sustain that. Ultimately, you're not going to match the others for revenue because you're a smaller club. You're from a smaller, poorer city with fewer people and a smaller stadium. And you're not going to compete with Arsenal and Spurs, let alone United and City. But there are those steps you can take.
Yeah, but like for Juan and Didi, that you got the perfect replacement or pretty much a perfect replacement for Conte, how many times can you do this? Because
that's
as we've seen, yeah, that's the challenge. And I think if you can keep Ndidi and Tielemans for another two or three years, and Fofana and Castagne and Justin and, you know, those kind of players, then you have a big chance, much bigger than if you have to sell one of them and then try to find the best replacement.
John, did you, just taking you back to that cup run, did you feel when you went out there and you played those bigger teams and knocked out those bigger teams, did you get a sense that people were insecure? And if so, were some of the people who were insecure, did they tend to be the younger players or did they tend to be the veterans?
Normally when I played years ago, Gab, it tended to be the younger players that were a little bit insecure. Now I think you're talking, and I think it's just the world in general, you're talking about different humans now. You're talking about everyone's a little bit fragile, a little bit vulnerable. But I think the game was a lot harder, I think, back in the day, where the experienced players had been around the block, that had lots of games under their belt. They knew the world and how it worked. The game's certainly faster now. I think the young players are probably more intelligent. They're put into systems which suit them. And I think the other thing as well is, you know, is the question is, how do you beat the food chain if you're Leicester? How do you beat that food chain? Because it's inevitable that if Leicester are doing well, they're in the top four, they're going to lose some of their big players. We've seen Maguire go, we've seen Mahrez go, Kante go. The next one might just be the manager. If Man United are ever struggling and Tottenham are ever struggling and Arsenal are ever struggling, the next manager, I would think, before looking at foreign managers and different managers coming from offshore, surely Brendan Rodgers has to be on the lips of, you know, at boardroom level, having the conversation, who we bring in next, who plays the great football in the Premier League, what's a really good side to watch? It's Leicester. I think the mixture that he's got, as I said, between manager, coaching staff, exceptional young players, brilliant experience, and they play amazing football, right, and they're a great side to watch. They demolished Man U at the weekend.
I think one of the good news for Leicester is that, as I understand it, the people who are in charge of recruitment, it's not like, I know we're still stuck on this whole thing, like it's Harry Redknapp's world, and it's like, Rodgers signed him, Rodgers signed that. No, they have people who are in charge of recruitment,
yeah,
who obviously Rodgers is part of the decision-making, but they have a really strong recruitment department who are both in terms of human scouting, obviously pre-pandemic, and in terms of analytics, those guys are really cutting edge. Yeah. And, you know, Rodgers works very well with them, but you could imagine somebody else replacing Rodgers. Hey, just for straw poll purposes, I'm going to ask you both, what do you think is the likeliest, the one or two likeliest big six job openings coming up, if you had to guess?
Wow.
Tottenham, I would say. I would say if the Tottenham job comes up, I think they would be looking at Brendan Rodgers.
I could see Tottenham. And then I would assume after Tottenham, you're probably looking at United or Arsenal, but that feels very, very much down the road.
Yeah, because Solskjaer is going to get a new deal. I think Arteta is there on a certainly longer term project anyway. Liverpool and club.
So here's the thing. So
it only leaves you with Spurs. But Spurs, Mourinho has 2 more years on his contract after this season.
And he has an enormous contract, which makes it super difficult to sack him. So the reason I ask this is, if you're Brendan, is this maybe where you take a step back and you think, you know what? If I do move on, because it's hard to sustain this for 2 or 3 years. Maybe my next big job might be abroad.
Why? Well, you can wait 2 years at Leicester. Next season, they'll be in the Champions League, which would give them a huge boost in revenue, easily 50 to 60 million more on what they currently have. They've got the brand new training ground. They will have the fans back at the King Power. With a bit of luck, because of the pandemic and stuff, clubs won't come and raid their squad. So you could stay, you could stay like this for another season minimum.
Another season, I agree. I think after it's really difficult for Leicester to finish in the top four over the next 2-3 seasons. And if you're calculating, you might say, hey, I did a great job, but you know what? I could do an even better job next year and finish 5th or 6th simply because the other teams have more money, more resources, and I'm outgunned. And then maybe my stock goes down. And then maybe the only job opening that might come up is Spurs, but even then they might go in a different direction. Might, I guess what I'm driving at, might he be tempted by a job abroad? You know, Rodgers is actually speaks more than one language. I think that might be one to watch going forward. Yeah, personally, maybe. I hope he's... I want to see another season at least at Leicester from him. Let's wind it back to United. This issue with the diamond, okay? Let's leave Bruno Fernandes to one side for a second. This is my obsession because I know that earlier in the year, I questioned Solskjaer because I said, you know, what is your obsession with the flying wingers and this Manchester United trope that people bring up all the time? And in fact, in the best years, they didn't have flying wingers. They had Giggs, okay? And then on the other side, it was David Beckham, hardly a flying winger.
Certainly not flying,
No, certainly not flying. why don't you play the diamond, right? And... but then I see the diamond and it's bad. And please, you can't tell me, Don, this was bad simply because Bruno Fernandes wasn't there. Because you had Van de Beek and Pogba and...
I don't think Van de Beek is made for that position behind two strikers. That's my point before Don speaks.
Is that it? Is that Donny van de Beek not made to play at the tip of a diamond?
I think he is made to play for a club like Man United, but for whatever reason, he doesn't get a chance. And you can see it in his eyes. You can see it in his face. He's lacking confidence. And that's natural. You know, when you come in from Ajax for a big fee and you are probably in one of the top 12 midfield players in the world in terms of his form, and you go to a club like Man U, you think you're going to be brilliant. You think you're going to get in the 11 and you're going to be exceptional. And he can't buy a starting place. And if he buys one starting place, he gets dragged after an hour, or he doesn't get a run of 4 or 5 games, which anyone needs.
But what's his position, Don?
Over-reliant on...
Don,
sorry?
Do you agree with Jules that... he can't play as the tip of the diamond. He can't play in the hole. That's what Jules is saying. Do you agree with that?
Not necessarily. I mean, he is best as a number 10, but I don't think he's going to oust Bruno Fernandes. He's the best number 10 they've got. But Donny van de Beek can play as an 8. He doesn't have to, he's not a holding midfield player, but he can play as an 8. You know, he can play a variety of roles, not too many. But I just look at United and I just think if you stop Bruno Fernandes from playing, I just think they turn into a really average side. And Bruno Fernandes can be stopped. He's not this guy who's got a trick. He's not a guy that's got loads of pace. He's not a guy that's got an engine who goes box to box. He relies on a little bit of space. And if he gets freed up, he's exceptional with his vision and his long-range passing. He can take a penalty and a free kick. But I don't see him as being this unbelievable player. I see his stats and his numbers being good. But if he doesn't get an assist or a goal, he's very ineffective in a game.
Is that a bit harsh on Bruno?
I mean, that's one for another show, I think, because we could do the whole show on Bruno Fernandes and his impact and not impact. For Van de Beek, and we saw it in the great run that Ajax had in the Champions League, for me, he's best almost as a second striker, but with the freedom of pretty much being everywhere on the pitch. And I think people, and rightly, criticise him for the performance against Leicester. It was difficult. But his dummy... His dummy makes the Mason Greenwood goal. It's not the cross from Pogba. It's not Greenwood's run.
Of course.
It's the dummy that makes it. So he's got that in him, that intelligence, the awareness, all of that. But if you only use him once every 4 months, you're hardly going to give him enough rhythm to then be more efficient in a game. And I just think it's a shame. And I certainly don't think, as a number 10 behind two strikers, that's his position, because there's no room for him to run into the box, or at least not enough than when he could be at his best.
It would take a lot more sophisticated tactical work for it to work in that way.
And you know what I wonder about the diamond gap? Maybe it's not working because they don't work enough on it, about it, at training. Because otherwise...
Because they don't have any training sessions because of the stupidly congested
fixture. Yeah, maybe the manager, you know, is not...
You watch it.
No, but
God's listening.
We said the other day there's been some baby steps in terms of improvement. And then I watched the game on Sunday and I think, like, where's the improvement? There's no improvement.
No,
what is this? It's almost like one step, a mini step forward and then a huge step back. Every 2 months we have that.
Sunday was dire, admittedly. Just final point on this. You're just on that number 10 position on the whole behind two strikers. I look around Europe and that position almost doesn't exist, right? Mm-hmm. And where it does exist, you know, even teams that are even with one striker, even teams that play 4-2-3-1, you know, it's often a different profile of player. I mean, you can argue De Bruyne plays as a 10 sometimes, but he does it very differently. He has a different skill set. As Don said earlier, you know, De Bruyne is good on the half turn. De Bruyne has got the acceleration, which Bruno Fernandes doesn't have. I'm just wondering, is this skill set pretty unique? Because he feels sometimes like a throwback to a player of another era. You know, the player who, I mean, you told this great story off air about, you know, when they played Milan in the Europa League, where you put somebody on and they marked him out of the game. The one moment he slips away, he sets up Amad Diallo.
Yeah.
Is it that he's so unconventional that when he's not there, whoever steps into that role will inevitably need to play the role differently?
No, I don't think so, Gab. I don't think he's indispensable. I think if Donny van der Beek...
No, unconventional. I'm not saying he's indispensable. So, like, you're set up to playing with somebody like that, right? And then there's nobody else like that. In fact, there's very few people like that. Not because he's so good or whatever, just because his skill set is so unique that necessarily when he's not there, it has a knock-on effect on every other part of the pitch.
Yeah, but I think you're looking at different characteristics when you look at players, and you think Bruno Fernandes, as I said before, he plays the game more like a quarterback. You know, that's his speciality. When he sees a pass and his range is good, you know, he's got every range in the path in the locker where it's 10, 20, 40 yards. He's exceptional at that. But if he wasn't in that side and Donny van der Beek played it as a number 10, he would bring so much more. I'm not saying he's a better player, but he'd bring different things to the party where he's a lot quicker. He'd get on the half turn. He tries a trick. He's got a goal. He's got an assist in conventional play, by the way, not just free kicks and penalties. So I think if Donny van der Beek, and all you have to do is go back 18 months and watch Donny van der Beek playing for Ajax, the kid was sensational. His confidence was high. He had a run of games. He had rhythm, like Jules said. You know, the kid is an unbelievable talent, but you can see the confidence is just getting knocked out of him.
I think this is one of the great kind of underreported. Love somebody to do a good piece in depth about this guy's career arc, because obviously he came to Italy very young from Portugal when he was 18. And, you know, he moved around at Sampdoria and Udinese. And the knock on him was always the same is, all right, he's very, very technically gifted. He's got a really strong personality, you know, doesn't back down. Great attitude.
Yeah.
He's just not a great athlete, and he doesn't fit into the tactical system. So he was seen strictly as that luxury player in Italy. Now, he showed when he went to Sporting that put the guys around him, let him do his thing, and he's an absolute difference maker, and he's been a difference maker, obviously, for United. But it's very rare for a player to kind of fly so far under the radar for so long.
Yeah, completely. And at Sampdoria, he had some really good games, and then he would disappear completely for 3, 4, 5 games in a row and then come back. At Sporting, there was more consistency, you're right, in a league that was not as strong as Serie A. And then at United, it's the hold that he has on that team that is incredible. So much they depend on him so much that when he's not there, you could almost feel that there's just something missing and that you could put Van der Beek in there. And by the way, for Van der Beek, is the problem maybe not the fact that he's just not Solskjaer's player, that they signed him without really Solskjaer saying yes, giving the green light, that he's more of a sort of Ed Woodward, Edwin van der Sar kind of agreement deal? Because if Solskjaer really wanted him in the summer, he would play more. He would, and not just play more, but play more in his right environment, in his right position. Because that was not a present, Solskjaer starting him in that position on Sunday.
That's one of those mysteries that, you know, I've kind of given up on, like, who's who. Whenever you have this thing by committee, did the manager want him, did this guy not want him? It's odd to me. I mean, everything we've heard is that they do things by committee. So it seems stupid to me that you give Solskjaer this massive contract, and then he says, no, I'd rather not sign him, hypothetically. Hmm. And then you sign him anyway. That just seems stupid to me.
I know, but
I think more
that's
likely,
the only reason why I can see the situation.
I think more likely, and Dom, we'll give you the last word on this. I just give you a different scenario, which is we need to stop with this idea. Managers are overworked. It's a big job. We need to stop with this idea that managers know everything about the players they're going to sign, because they don't. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer does not sit around watching the Eredivisie. He would have seen him on television. He would have read all the scouting reports. He would have sat there with a Y-Scout video.
Right.
But in the end, he might have signed off on it because he looks good, but he's not going to necessarily have the 360-degree view that comes with working with a player until the guy gets there.
Okay, so what, you think then he says yes, Van de Beek gets there, and then Solskjaer says, he's not as good as I thought he was, or...
Yes, but simply put.
But this is not possible. We're talking about Donny Van de Beek, not you and me turning up at United training ground and say, hey, it's us, and then, you're not good. Who can say that Donny van de Beek is not a good player right now? No one.
I'm not saying he's not a good player, but maybe not the kind of guy. Don, we'll give you the last word on this. We've seen it happen where managers sign off on players, and then the guy shows up, and he's not what they necessarily expected. And I think in many cases, actually, managers will continue playing them because they don't want to be proven wrong. But we've seen this all the time, don't we?
I don't think we see it all the time. And I don't think you can say that about Donny van de Beek and guys that are regularly on your TV. You've got no excuse if you're Ole Gunnar Solskjaer not to watch Champions League football and not to watch Ajax. You know, even if he can't do it, he will have a scouting network behind the scenes that's watching and calculating every single minute that every single player plays across Europe. There's no excuse these days for you to sign a professional footballer and then turn around and just say, no, he's not as good as what I thought he was. The guy's different class. The guy is an amazing talent. He's young. He's okay. He's a little bit fragile because his confidence has been shot. But I guarantee you, and you guys know the game, if he ever leaves Man United, he goes on. Listen, Barcelona wanted to sign him with Frankie de Jong. That's how good he is. So it's not like he's just some kid who's walked out of bottom three of the Eredivisie and gone into Man United. Then you go,
I'm not suggesting, just for a minute, that Solskjaer thinks if Van de Beek is a bad player or whatever. I'm just suggesting that maybe he didn't have the complete picture, and maybe a lot of other people at the club were very high on him, and maybe his plans for him, once he sees him, says, well, this isn't really going to work, because ultimately Solskjaer's job is to coach a team and be the manager. And maybe this is a flaw in the scouting, where maybe the clubs that work well, the scout knows what the manager wants to do, and they kind of know what fits into the manager's way of doing things better than the manager does.
Yeah, no, you're right.
That's how it's supposed to work.
I just think that he brings you something completely different than what you had, and you could have used him far better and far more this season.
We need to wrap it here. Thanks so much, Don.
Anytime, guys.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, enough United, enough Leicester. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
Jules, you and I had bigged up at El Sociedad earlier this season. So how impressed are we that Ronald Koeman's Barcelona demolished them 6-1? This was a beatdown.
Yeah, that was really impressive, I have to say. And we need to give credit to Ronald Koeman again, because we've been critical of him when it was right to be. And now we have to praise him because it's right to be as well. That
Absolutely.
Formation works so well.
The when players, facts change, opinions change.
Exactly. And, you know, those players together have been really impressive tactically, technically, individually. Sergino Dest had maybe his best game of his life, maybe, completely. And Messi was outstanding on a day where he beat more records of more appearances in La Liga and all sorts, more goals for a single club in the second league or something like this. Is pretty impressive. And you know what, we knew that Real Sociedad at times could be destroyed, and we saw that with United in the Europa League, but that was special, wasn't it?
Frankie de Jong in the back three, I thought, works. I wonder cautiously if this is something you consider going forward, if you are in fact committed to the back three, although against other opponents I'm not sure you get away with Busquets in midfield.
True.
So that's the flip side. But it does give you that flexibility.
Yeah,
you know, maybe you either buy an outstanding midfielder or you buy an outstanding centre back.
Yeah. Barca then stay 4 points back in La Liga because Atletico Madrid beat Alaves on Sunday. Gav, this was very old school from Atleti though.
Yeah, the first half was absolutely horrendous. It was like a continuation of Atleti's games against Chelsea. obviously, he said something at halftime. They were much more progressive, much more attacking in the second half. Luis Suarez wasn't, you know, out there on Suarez Island by himself. Got the goal. And then again, the last 15 minutes, they all retreat, and it's back to Cholismo 1.0, and Jan Oblak has to do what Jan Oblak does, which is save a penalty. So this was really nervy, really close. Yeah. He's got some time to think about it over the break. I think it's critical that he thinks about what kind of team do we want to be. Because right now, we're not set up to go and play, to go and sit back and defend the way we did. We can do that for stretches, but we cannot.
Yeah.
We might not win La Liga if we do that. And of course, Barcelona, Atleti still to come in May, I think.
Yeah.
Now, there was Premier League football too. West Ham went 3-0 up, and it finished 3-3 against Arsenal. can you imagine letting a 3-0 lead slip? Where have we seen that before? Yeah. Anyway, this was absolutely wild. But was it also good?
I thought it was good. I mean, I'm not the... I've got a lot of respect for David Moyes and West Ham. I'm not the biggest fan in the sense that they're very efficient, they're very solid. That's what they do. It's not free flowing football really. But they took their first chance really well. Jesse Lingard. Then it's a huge mistake by Arsenal again, who fell asleep on that free kick. And Ben Leno should have done better. And then suddenly you find yourself 3-0 down, and you were like, oh wow, this is humiliating. But then Arsenal were the best team by far for the rest hour of that game. They should have won this game.
Lacazette's goal was deflected.
It was a bit different. Yeah.
You say Arsenal should have won, but was it remarkable?
They should have won. They had so many chances.
Arsenal played really well in the second half. They had a lot of chances.
The end of the first half as well.
But equally, West Ham missed an absolute sitter at the end too.
Yeah. And
Michael they hit Antonio. The woodwork too.
Yeah, they did. It was just an amazing game. But I like Martin Odegaard, who was at the heart of everything good that Arsenal did, and he did a lot of things good. It was not assist all the time, but second assist, like on the first goal, for example, they was just so good. I think he completed 7 passes in West Ham's box, which is the most by any Arsenal player this season. And I just thought it was amazing, and that was really good. And in the end, maybe you're right. Maybe it's a fair draw.
So good news for Real Madrid then.
Really good for Real Madrid. Manchester City are through to the FA Cup semi-finals, where they will face Leicester. They beat Everton 2-0, and Carlo Ancelotti said that right now they're the best team in the world. City, Gab, your pal is Captain Obvious, right? But still, it's good to say it. You know,
it's good to remind yourself of it. I think this was a game where I think, you know, Everton had some people missing, so he set up rationally to keep them out, you know, leaving Calvert-Lewin and Richarlison up there far, far away. But, you know, they worked hard. They kept them out for a long time, until 6 minutes till the end. And even then, I thought there was a bit of fortune with the City goal. So, look, in the end, all you can ask is you stay in games against City till the very end. They did that. But City are just on a different level. And, you know, you can... We thought Fernandinho, you talked about putting people in the freezer, right? I thought Fernandinho was going to run out, whatever. But he had a monster game.
It was incredible. At his age.
A well-rested Fernandinho is a totally different proposition.
Yeah.
Paris Saint-Germain win away to Lyon 4-2 and go back to the top of Ligue 1. Jules, to paraphrase Mark Twain, rumors of their demise were greatly exaggerated.
Maybe, but it was huge performance to start with. They were so good for 70 minutes. Then they took the eye of the ball a little bit and Lyon scored two goals. But when they were 4-0 up, they were incredible. The pressing, the counter-pressing, the intensity they played with, the way they kept the ball, moved the ball around. It was fantastic. Kylian Mbappe was on fire, scored two goals. His 99 and 100th goal in Ligue 1 in 142 games. If you add the 41 assists, that's 141 goals he's been involved in 142 games, which is incredible.
Is that a record? Is he the quickest, youngest player to get to 100 goals, or does somebody else do that?
Yeah, I think the youngest, the quickest, 22 years of age, as we said, in 142 games. Or maybe Ibra did it slightly quicker. Maybe 130 games.
But he was older Ibra at the time.
But it was older.
And it's Ibra, come on.
There was not the assist either. But incredible performance, really good. And Poch was really happy, rightly so. Neymar played the last 20 minutes. So, all in all, a perfect evening for PSG.
And it could all go out the window if they lose to Lille.
Of course, but we'll see that next month. Chelsea also advance to the FA Cup semi-final and they will face Southampton after Chelsea beat Sheffield United. But Gab, were you expecting more from than what we saw from Chelsea against Sheffield United?
Like, he made a bunch of changes. Like, he's true to his word about giving people chances, right? You know, we saw Chilwell again. We saw Emerson playing as a centre-back, basically. I saw some, what would concern me a little bit is that Sheffield United just sat back and defended, and then in the second half, you know, they're a goal down and said, hey, screw this. Let's try and create chances. And they created a ton of chances. Yeah. That second goal, Hakim Ziyech, was a total garbage time goal. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, you know, if you concede, then you're throwing it away. Sheffield United, by the way, I think, didn't they? Aren't they one of two teams to have scored against Tuchel in the Premier League? I believe it's them and Southampton.
Yeah, of course. The Rudiger own goal.
Yeah, maybe that's why Rudiger wasn't there. I'm just kidding. But you saw some encouraging things. Pulisic playing in a position he should be playing
Did you see that flip-flap? Oh,
I thought you'd like that. So look, the long audition for Thomas Tuchel continues, and they're through. And he's got a legit chance of winning a trophy. Yeah.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Real Madrid beat Celta 3-1 as Karim Benzema scores twice and dishes out an assist. Jules, we're all impressed with him. Are we as impressed with Real Madrid?
Yes and no. I think that's the answer. Yes, because Benzema is 33 and he's been just incredible this season. 23 goals now in all competition. I think he's 7 or 8 assists all in all. I don't know where they would be without him, but certainly not where they are now. And collectively, okay, this was a game against Celta that Celta gives you a lot of space. They're playing team, so
Have expected Real Madrid to create more and they didn't.
Yeah, exactly. And I thought it was very minimalist from what we saw. Again, they put themselves in danger in the second half, as often we've seen that often this season. So I wasn't convinced massively by the performance. But again, Benzema just
third goal was garbage time.
Yeah, so, yeah, garbage time as well. Yeah. Alphonso Davies gets sent off after 12 minutes in the Bayern Munich Stuttgart game. And Gab, you probably thought, like all of us, that the Bavarians would drop points, being 10 against 11 for so long. But then what happened?
I don't know. Then it was some Bayern voodoo mentality.
Incredible.
I've never seen anything like that.
I was shocked.
I mean, you have to play 78 minutes with 10 men against one of the surprise packages in the Bundesliga this season. Mm. You know, that's a huge ask. And there's no Joshua Kimmich in the middle of the park. But no, Lewandowski hat-trick. I mean, inside 11 minutes from the sending off, they had scored three times and were 3-0 up.
Which has never happened, I think, ever before in the Bundesliga. It's crazy. It'll
probably never happen again. I thought this was just unreal. Lever up to 35 goals.
Ooh, he's getting the record, isn't it?
He needs 5 goals and 8 to match Gerd Muller, sure, 6 yeah. goals and 8 to beat him. It's hard to imagine him not doing it yeah. at this stage. Absolutely tremendous. And this is obviously after Leipzig had won on Friday night, mm-hmm. bringing the lead back to 4 points. And when we return, it's Leipzig v Bayern, and that will decide the title.
Yeah.
Sticking with the Bundesliga, Erling Haaland scored early and very late for Borussia Dortmund as they got a point against Cologne. It finished 2-2. Jules, he was angry at halftime and he was angry at the final whistle. He has every right to be, right?
He is, because, I mean, he can't do everything for that team. Scoring 2 is not enough to beat Cologne, and they were so bad defensively again. I mean, it's just not... He's there on his own, and you can understand his frustration.
How happy are you that Thomas Meunier is no longer...
Oh, my God. I can understand the frustration. However, he got really stroppy at the end. Mere, the Cologne defender, wanted to swap shirt. He just threw his shirt at Mere, not waiting for Mere to give him his shirt, then stormed into the dressing room, apparently insulting everyone.
What's he going to do with Mere's shirt?
I don't know. That's not the point, Gab. That's what you do. You swap. He left the stadium, you know, in a rage in the space of a few minutes, not saying a word to anyone, Terzic or his teammate. I understand the frustration. He's 20, though. He would have other days like that. It's not always going to be your way and, you know, all of that.
I go back to this. This is where you expect leadership from your senior players on the pitch.
Yeah.
Marco Reus seems like he's been marginalized a little bit.
Mats Hummels.
I don't know what Hummels and Sean are doing.
Yeah.
This hurts.
Juventus somehow lose to people in Zaghi's Benevento, who, by the way, hadn't won in 11 games in the league. Gab, if they lose their game in hand, they would drop out of the top four in Serie A. And like our friend Jan Agafjortov invited us to imagine, just imagine the criticism had the manager not be Andrea Pirlo.
Well, it would have been Ole Gunnar Solskjaer type criticism. Look, he's right. Pirlo gets special treatment.
Why?
He gets special treatment because the team is transitioning, and because he's new to the job, and because he's a club legend. That's simply the way football works. You can still criticize the fact that they were unprepared when they went on the pitch, the fact that they, again, were terrible for the first 20 minutes to half an hour. And look, this wouldn't change, right? I mean, if you're Juve, you can point out to the fact that Danilo missed the sitter at the end and should have been a penalty, maybe, on Chiesa when he went down the box. Yeah, it's fine. So you win the game. It doesn't matter. You still stink. And you really have to think about why they're playing like this, why they're playing so badly. People focus, why are they building up from the back? I still think it's the right choice. It's the right choice to build up from the back. It's the right choice to try to have that, to try to want the ball, to try to go vertical, to play in the opposition's half. Because frankly, this is how successful teams play in the modern game. And this is part of the reason why there are no Italian teams in the quarterfinals of the Champions League. And the team actually that came closest, Atalanta, arguably, are the one team that actually does it.
Yeah.
The idea
but
is
correct. You don't see any improvement, right? So that's disappointing.
That's hugely disappointing. And the question we're going to have to decide, is Pirlo the right man? You've come out, Fabio Baratic again, saying, oh, no, yeah. Pirlo and Cristiano will both be here next year. I think they do. You've embarked on this. You may as well give them more time. But the critical thing is whether it's Pirlo or whether it's somebody else who replaces him, you cannot move away from what you're trying to do.
Yeah.
Let's continue with Juve managers past and present. Max Allegri says that after Zinedine Zidane quit following the 2017-18 season, Real Madrid reached out to him. He said no, and they appointed Lopetegui instead. Of course, you're famously appointing Lopetegui by taking him from the Spanish national team at the World Cup and screwing up the whole World Cup, but that's a whole other issue. Jules, how would history have unfolded if Max had said see?
That's a good point. I'm surprised that he said no to start with. Maybe he didn't feel, because he didn't speak the language, that would be a big issue.
I wonder if he wanted to coach Ronaldo too. Also, doesn't speak the language. Okay, Max Allegri has a very Tuscan accent, but for an Italian to understand Spanish, not that difficult.
No, that's true. Maybe he thought they were in transition or on the way down. I'm not sure. I would have liked to see it, and maybe we will see it one day at some point. Let's say if Zinedine Zidane leaves in this summer, Max Allegri will still be available, and maybe this time he will say see. But
it's 3 years out is a long time.
Yeah, it is.
I kind of miss him. I kind of miss the little anchovy, as he was known in his playing days.
Milan come from behind to beat Fiorentina 3-2 and stay second in Serie A. Gab, both Frank Ribery and Zlatan Ibrahimovic scored in this game, in the same game. What is it? Is this like 2005, 2010? What's happening? 38 and 39.
All right. Ribery's kind of like been there and disappeared and been there and disappeared, took his goal, silly goal celebration.
What do you mean silly? It's just a dance, you know?
Okay, it's a silly dance. You don't look good doing that. No, but I thought this was very impressive for Milan. I think they needed a statement to bounce back. And look, this team is so much better when Zlatan's there, and especially when Bennacer's there.
Yeah.
And beyond the result, the performance was convincing. And that's the big takeaway for me.
I agree.
Tottenham Hotspur bounced back from the Europa League disaster to beat Aston Villa 2-0. Jules Mourinho said they were driven by the shame of their elimination at the hands of Dinamo Zagreb.
That was bad, that humiliation, that elimination. I'm not sure if they were driven by that shame, because I didn't think they were very good. But hey, they won. They were kind of solid against a team without Jack Grealish, that is not the same team, as we know.
By the way, Jack Grealish, like, is there any team in the Premier League that's more dependent on a single player?
I don't think
so. It's like a different team when he's not there.
Yeah, so different. And but also, I don't think they've been very transparent on, you know, why he was out. First he was injured, then he was ill, but coming back from illness, so that was good. Then he's out again, and we're not really sure exactly what it is. I mean, as you always say, be transparent. Just say, this is what happened. This is what's happening. You know, he would be out so-and-so. I'm just not sure.
Not sure about his white tights
helping.
Either.
What about the penalty? I mean, that's
another one. I think the technical term, Kane played for it.
Yeah.
But I think overall, look, it's important that they got a reaction.
Oh, big time.
I mean, and I thought Mourinho laid it on a little bit thick. I didn't understand his concept afterward when he said, like, you know, this was about all the players who are living a dream.
And yeah, that makes no
sense. The 16-year-old kids on the bench who didn't come on, incidentally, and like, even if they only play 1 second. And I thought he was being all mysterious also when he started talking about outside influences and agents on the club. Like, I'm like, your agent? George Mendes? Like, I don't know, put it this way. This is, when I talk about transparency and clarity, I have no problem with, maybe Mourinho's a point. But when you don't speak clearly, right? You don't have to say it directly, but you have to be clear. Or you follow up. And look, I mean, I'm lifting a lid on how this business works. Or you follow up with friendly people in the media and you say, hey, Duncan. No, not Duncan. Well, whoever it may be. And you say, by the way, when I talked about outside influences on the club, I'm referring to this. When you read it in a newspaper, like Mourinho was thought to be referring to, it's usually because the press officer or one of Mourinho's servants, right, says goes to the media and says, oh, when he said that, he was talking about this, that, and that. Right?
Yeah.
And that's how these stories get out there. They're not made up by people in the press. As far as I know, I haven't read any cogent explanation about what in that God's green earth Mourinho was talking about.
I don't know.
So obviously that step was missed. And it bounces back because you end up attacking the wrong people. You don't have the desired effect. But they got the win, and I think that's big.
That's the most important, for sure. Napoli make it 3 wins in a row as Dries Mertens scores twice and they beat Roma 2-0. Gab, if they win their game in hand, by the way, against Juventus, they're third. So why might he not be there next year? That's Dries, of course.
As you say in Italian, his balls are full.
His balls are full.
Yes, okay. Balls as in like the footballs that you kick around. Working for this club, Aurelio De Laurentiis, obviously it's been a really, really tough spot. A lot of people go through this. And I think Gattuso looks around and says, you know what? Maybe I can get a bigger job. And he's entitled to do it because he's not highly paid. He wasn't given a long-term contract. He was treated as like, oh, look, let's bring in a player coach. Let me sack Ancelotti and bring in a player coach here, see what he can do. It's just not the greatest environment.
And De Laurentiis already is, you know, checked with other managers to take his place back in, January he was. So
The funniest thing is Gattuso's been linked with Roma. And Roma, Roma were terrible in this game, right?
Yeah.
But the reports are, and Paulo Fonseca, his contract gets automatically renewed if they reach the Champions League. There's suggestions that Roma might move on from Fonseca and get Gattuso, and then Fonseca would go to Napoli because, of course, you know, let's swap managers here.
This
is absurd. Fonseca should keep his job.
Yeah.
It's not fair in any way, shape, or form to judge him on this season, which, by the way, it's not been a bad season for Roma.
No.
They've had disappointments. But given all the crap and the injuries and the change in ownership and the idiot club secretaries and the Dzeko nonsense, come on, man.
They're in the quarterfinals of the Europa League against Ajax.
Absolutely.
You know, and still in the race for the top four.
Sevilla leave it very, very late against Valladolid to snatch a 1-1 draw. Jules, it's 2 points dropped, but the story here is the equalizer, which will go down in history.
Oh, it will, because Bono, the Sevilla goalkeeper, scored that equalizer in the 94th minute. If you haven't seen it, go and check it. It's a great finish as well. I mean, they get a bit lucky because it looked like the ball is out, and then he's
twice the
post.
Defenders had a chance to clear the ball.
Yeah, they didn't. But I guess for a goalkeeper to score, you need everything to go your way, really.
And incidentally, I know some of the defenders were given a hard time. They didn't want to concede a corner.
They didn't want to concede
another corner. So they somehow kept the ball in play, and whatever. Yeah. It's fantastic.
But great. We love it when a goalkeeper scores, especially a game that important that get you a point, which could be crucial in the top four race. Inter's game against Sassuolo, Gabby, is postponed after four players test positive for COVID. But I'm sure Conte is still angry, right?
Of course he's angry.
He spent his season angry.
He's angry because the lead over Milan has obviously gone down, even though not
six,
game in hand. He's more angry about something else, which I'm going to try to explain this as quickly as I can without getting too bureaucratic. But the players tested positive for COVID. Then they took the PCR test. They took the rapid test, and they tested negative. So, but they said, "Well, it's not wholly reliable. We need to test again," and that's why the game was postponed. Then they also had them take a blood test, which, as you know, is far more reliable.
Yeah.
They're going to get the results of the blood test today, as in Monday. But a lot of these guys have been, like Christian Eriksen and Bastoni, a lot of these guys have been picked for international duty. So according to the protocol, even if the blood test all reveals that they're all negative, they still have to go. Well, Inter argued, well, no, then they still have to stay in quarantine regardless. And the national teams, understandably, are saying, they're going to come with the national teams and do their quarantine with the national teams so that they can later play. So it's going to get messy.
Yeah.
It's more stress for Conte, but somehow I think he kind of enjoys the stress. Now, I thought it would be a gimme when top of the table Lille faced second bottom Nîmes. I was wrong. It's the magic of Ligue 1.
It is the magic of Ligue 1. We saw Nantes beating PSG last weekend. This time it's Nîmes in Lille as well, and deservedly so. It's not even if it was like a smash and grab win. It was deserved. They played really well. They had a good game plan. Lille, I don't know if they're tired now a bit, if the sort of the magic of their own season is sort of drying out a bit, but they were not good, and they didn't deserve anything from that game. And as we said before, with PSG winning, now we've got an even more exciting title race, because PSG are top, level on point with Lille. Then you've got Lyon behind. Then Monaco, 4 points adrift. So
enough with the Monaco. You keep shoehorning them into the
because
title
race. Because they were amazing on Friday night. I mean, Tchouameni was incredible. It was such a great Monaco performance. You know what? Monaco of those four, probably the ones that played the best football this season.
It's the third time this season that the team that's second bottom in Ligue 1 has beaten the team that's top.
It's crazy, isn't it?
And where else but in the Premier League, right?
Love it. Crotone striker Nwankwo Simi was racially abused on Instagram at the weekend. Gab, he chose to hit back.
And not the only one, of course. We didn't mention this before, but of course, Fred also subjected to abuse. Yeah, Nwankwo Simi, who is an incredibly popular figure in Crotone, he got a private message on Instagram. I mean, awful, awful stuff. Mm-hmm. Very specific stuff, not just about his kid, about the plague, about Nigeria. I mean, awful stuff. He screenshotted it and he put it out on social media and says, "Hey, everybody, why don't we make this guy famous?" The guy who private messaged him. And look, I think naming and shaming, until we get actual legislation and action, I think naming and shaming, this idiot, by the way, I assume he put his real name on there, which, because it's not the kind of name you're going to make up, right?
Yeah.
So I'm all for this. Bring this out in the open, right? You know, you don't go and send a private message to somebody if you don't have the guts to say it to, not even to their face, but to say it in public where your employers, your family members, people can see it. Then, you get what's coming to you.
Because you started a good debate on Twitter over the weekend about this and say maybe you should not allow Twitter accounts to be anonymous, which for some people could be a problem.
Yeah, I've revised my view a little bit about this. In fact, one of the few good things to come out of Twitter
is this kind of debate. Yeah,
I think some people may need to be anonymous, at least to the outside world, and you get into the issue of, well, who protects the anonymity. I think this debate has to continue.
Yeah,
because some of the stuff that happens on there is just beyond the pale. And it's also a crime in some countries. Mm. In some countries, it's protected free speech. In other countries, like this one where we live, it is an actual crime.
Yeah.
So, and it puts the police in a really difficult situation because it's time consuming and difficult to go and investigate. I mean, sometimes they do, but you know, often they say we'd rather go and catch murderers and rapists, which I can kind of understand. There has to be a debate about this.
Yeah.
Jules, who is Dario Issugo and why are we talking about him?
Oh, bless him. He's became at the weekend the youngest ever player to play in the Portuguese top flight for Sporting. He's 16 and 3 days, I believe now, or 4 days maybe. And he cried.
He cried ahead of Cristiano Ronaldo.
Well already. Ahead of everybody else. All the wonder kid that they had in Portugal. And he cried at the end. He got so emotional and it was brilliant to see. He looks very talented, but he's very early, of course. We know how good the Sporting Academy is, and there's other very young, talented players in that Sporting team that is cruising towards his first title since 2002, and Ruben Amorim is doing a great job. But it was lovely to see him cry and how much it meant to him to make his debut at such a young age. So, well done, little Dario.
It's making us all forget about Youssoufa Moukoko.
Yeah, exactly. Gab. Xabi Alonso, Bild announced this morning, on Monday morning, that Xabi Alonso will take the job at Borussia Mönchengladbach to replace Marco Rose, who, as we know, is going to Borussia Dortmund. One, are you surprised that Xabi Alonso, who, by the way, was at the Real Sociedad youth team, take that job? And two, are you excited?
Xabi Alonso is one of the most intelligent footballers I've had the privilege of spending time with.
Yeah.
I think he's somebody who really studied this game. He's one who wanted to become a manager. He wants to have a range of experiences. He already played in Germany, of course, at Bayern, and you know, played under some pretty good managers,
pretty
from
good
Pep
managers.
Guardiola to Jose Mourinho. Liverpool
Rafa
fans
Benitez.
Are going to be angry if I don't mention
Rafa. You have to.
Rafa Benitez will take it personally if I don't.
Yeah.
So you know, all these things together suggest that he's doing it the right way, going down the plan.
Is he a big step though? Big jump from the reserve team at Real Sociedad, albeit they're doing really well and they're playing great, to Borussia Mönchengladbach, you know, one of the top teams in...
It's no bigger than the step that Andrea Pirlo took.
Yeah, you know. I guess so.
And you could also argue Xabi Alonso perhaps a little bit better equipped than Pirlo was. And, you know, I think it's going to be a reset season for Gladbach after Marco Rose leaving. The one thing I wonder is, do you think they put a big release clause in his contract? one that has to be actioned in January.
You did it in Marco Rose, but you cannot leave at any time before the summer. Okay.
FIFA president Gianni Infantino has emerged MLS and Liga MX, that's the Mexican league for those who aren't hip like me, could become the best league in the world. Jules, you agree?
No, of course not. But you know, it's good for him to say it. What then? That Super League would be a bit better than the Premier League.
Could become. But
what I think is this would be good for the game in Mexico and in the US. This would be good for the whole of the Americas game. I think it would be good for plenty of people. You will see players improving. You might see more players moving to Europe though as well, because the stronger that league is, the more ready those players will be to then move to Europe.
You didn't say when it would happen, but all of a sudden you have 400 million people and an enormous economy.
I think it's great.
The ingredients are there, but obviously, you know, you got to kick it up a few notches.
And let's see how many of those clubs then win the Club World Cup then against Cedar. That would be good to see. Dejan Lovren is in the news again, Gab. He stepped into the ring with an MMA fighter. So MMA, you know, is the mixed martial arts, if you don't know. A fighter named Mirko Kropkop didn't really last that long, did he?
I think you nearly said Mirko Crop Top, which I thought, man, he wouldn't appreciate that. He'd come by your house.
I'd show you
Crop Top. Good for Lovren. No, Zenit had a week off. It's funny, when you see them with their shirts off, actually, Lovren looks pretty darn good. But obviously, he's in the octagon, against a guy who is a proper mixed martial arts dude. And he lasted 50 seconds. It looked like he had fun. Nobody got hurt.
Yeah.
More power to him.
I'm not sure Mirko Kropkop can do many keepy uppies as well, you know, to put in the context of the other way around. So.
Yeah, I don't know how many Lovren does either, but still. Right, that brings us to an end. Thanks for joining us. Should we come back and do this again on Thursday?
International week.
All right, that gives us a chance to talk about many, many things, and not just international football. Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.